Never start with the head. The victim gets all fuzzy.
Here's Johnny.
I see Dave.
Houston, we have a problem.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 97 for the 21st of August, 2010. And I am David McVeigh, and I am joined in studio by... Wait for it. Celine Roberts, how are you?
Good.
And... published freelance journalist Josh Philpott.
You're just not going to let go of that, are you?
No, I'm not.
Shows, really. Thank you very much.
Okay, different audience. Please explain.
Thank you for making me feel really, really odd. Yes, for everyone that is a regular to the show, you should know we don't actually have anyone new, so it feels like I'm saying this to the same group.
Other people listening to the audio show.
I got my first article published in Australian 360, which was a two-page piece on our favorite topic here at Geek Actually, which is the R18 rating and what people should do.
Yeah.
And yes, thanks for that, Dave. And I'm good. Thank you for asking.
All right, now let's get back to normal introductions. How are you, Celine?
Good, thank you. Very good. My work isn't published in the Xbox 360 magazine, but you know.
Well, just,
I like to pretend
can
that
we
it
just
is.
Wrap this up and keep going, please? Thank you.
All right. And Josh, are you tired?
Yes.
Tired of me, anyway.
No, how could I ever get tired of you?
All right, let's move right in because we've got a full schedule today, so let's see if we can get through all of this. What is this? This is Film Actually. This is the official movie podcast of the Geek Actually Network or geekactually.com. Why are we starting it? Why are we at episode 97 when the show's only been going for four episodes? Well, that's because we kept continuity from all the normal Geek Actually shows. Bear with us. This week, we have two feature film reviews because we have to catch up for last week because, once again, we apologize for not being here last week. We had a crash. Listen to Tech Actually. You'll know all about that. All right? We're not going to get into the tech stuff here. But this week, because we have to pack in two feature film reviews, and I think one of them in particular is going to spark debate, we have kind of eliminated most of news this week because we really have a lot to fill in a short period of time.
Though.
We do have a couple of trailers that we're going to have a look at, though, in the middle of our show. And we also have our famous list of five. Now, if we run out of time, just to let us know right in advance, if we run out of time, the list of five will be bumped to the after show.
Mm.
All right, so if we don't get to the list of five, it will be in the after show because it's a goodie this week.
Exactly.
So we want to make sure we get it in there. All right.
I think the list of five is going to be, there's going to be a couple of debates going on there as well, so that should be interesting.
Yeah, I think there might be.
That should be
no
good
one
fun.
Can debate my list, I'm just putting that out there.
Well, I don't think anybody could debate the list because, I mean, there's so many films. It's whether or not they are the ones that are worthy of being mentioned is the question.
Oh. Well, again,
I've got one that I kind of don't think either of you will have, but... It's a well-known one.
I love
one.
The
I
how silent we're both like,
we both suddenly look across the table and are like, really?
I don't know. Maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe I'll be proven wrong in front of everyone. But let's continue.
Let's continue on. First thing we got to do, though, is we're going to move straight into our first feature review of this week. Now, our first feature review, of course, is... now I have a picture here. We can bring this up. Is Scott Pilgrim versus the World? This is probably the second most anticipated geek film of the year, next to Kick-Ass. Now Scott Pilgrim versus the World, directed by Edgar Wright. And if you don't know who Edgar Wright is, shame on you. But if you don't know who he is, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz,
and also
Spaced.
Spaced, which if you haven't seen, you should go and see it.
It's brilliant.
Now it is amazing.
The film Scott Pilgrim vs. the World is written by Edgar Wright and Michael Bacall and is based on the comic series by Brian Lee O'Malley. Now, what is it? Six issues total.
Yes.
Is that right? Six issues.
Yeah. Six issues total.
But big issues. 120,
130, yeah.
140.
Manga. Big issues, but incredibly easy to read, though, because they're mostly visual.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It stars Michael Cera, Kira Culkin, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Ellen Wong, Alison Pill, Mark Webber, Anna Kendrick, Aubrey Plaza, and the evil exes are Satya Babaha, I think is pronounced, I probably massacred that, Chris Evans, Mae Whitman, Brandon Routh, Jason Schwartzman, Keita Saito and Shota Saito. And Shota Saito. Okay, not related, they're different spellings. All right. Now, I actually pulled the description off of IMDb because, quite frankly, how do you describe this film? So I thought, I'm going to see what somebody else described it as. And I quite like this one, so I'm going to go with this one. Scott Pilgrim's life is so awesome. He's 23 years old, in a rock band, between jobs, and dating a cute high school girl. Everything's fantastic until a seriously mind-blowing, dangerously fashionable, rollerblading delivery girl named Ramona Flowers starts cruising through his dreams and sailing by him at parties. But the path to Ms. Flowers isn't covered in rose petals. Ramona's seven evil exes stand between Scott and true happiness. Can Scott defeat all seven of the bad guys and get the girl without turning his precious little life upside down before the game is over? Source IMDb. Thank you very much. And I thought that pretty much summed up this film. And we have a trailer to get us started. So let's fire this trailer off straight off the bat. And this will get us all in the mood.
Hey, what's up?
If we're gonna date, you may have to defeat my seven evil exes.
You have seven evil ex-boyfriends?
Bingo. Consider our fight begun.
And I have to fight defeat. Defeat your seven evil exes?
Pretty much.
Prepare to die.
What?
What's up? How's life? He seems nice.
I want to take them apart.
We all have baggage.
Yeah, well, my baggage doesn't try and kill me every 5 minutes.
Scott Pilgrim versus the world.
Next time, we don't date the girl with 11 evil ex-boyfriends.
Seven.
Oh, that's not that bad.
Okay, so if that trailer made any sense to you at all, you're a true geek.
You've proven your geekiness. It's like
score.
The initiation.
All right, so let's start on that side of the table. What do you guys think?
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Was a very, from the first moment I picked up Scott Pilgrim issue one, absolutely, just completely, totally fell in love with it. Loved the visual style, loved the visual gags, loved the geeky references, the computer game references, everything else, Legend of Zelda, Mario, stuff like that. Absolutely adored it. So the film, and having the film being made by Edgar Wright, who just has so much love for what he does, and you can tell it comes through in his movies, even when he does spoof films, you can tell he has an absolute love for the genre. Absolutely just brilliant, perfect film, loved it.
He the one thing that you really notice about Edgar Wright is that his love for games comes out in everything he does.
Yeah.
There's not a single film he's pretty much done, maybe with the exception of Hot Fuzz, but every other thing he's done always has at least a small homage to video games in general.
Yeah.
And the thing that I love is every time I watch Spaced or whatever, the games that are there are never just Street Fighter or something like that.
Something
they're always
obvious.
slightly obscure.
Yeah,
something
well, that's
like
the thing. Just obscure enough that if you know what they're talking about, you're like, yes, oh my god, I know that. Yeah.
But yeah, so there's always the little wink to camera that he always was a gamer, but you could really see that the second this project came up as a concept, he was like, I have to
100%.
Have this, because he knew he could do it right. And this is what I love about it, is when you get past the pop culture reference and all that sort of stuff, this is a video game in a movie. And this is probably the best adaptation you can ever have, because it's not trying to make a video game a movie, it's making a movie out of a video game.
And what I love about that, one of the things I love about this is, I said this when we walked out of the cinema, was it's the best video game movie made that wasn't based on a video game. And you sit there and look at it, it's like, if they were making video game movies, this is how you do it.
But like, and the other thing is, dude, that a lot of people don't understand, that even the storyline itself is video game. Mm. Like, that is exactly the way you would do it. It is done like
level by level, defeat your bosses, and then get to the princess at the end. Yeah.
To be honest, it's more like an 8-bit role-playing game is what it is. Because, I mean, you've got the coins and all this sort of stuff, and it's really, really well held together around that world. So, as a geek, I absolutely adore this film because I just look at it and go, the person that created the story has sat down and go, how do I transcribe what the feeling of a video game is into something that works in reality, or, you know, as best as you possibly can. And the comic book itself succeeded in that.
Yeah.
And then for Edgar Wright to take the ridiculously crazy concept of what that comic was and make it into a movie, that's what deserves the most credit.
Absolutely.
Out of this entire
thing.
Absolutely,
and to be as faithful as he was to, I mean, to, including the words on
and
screen,
just
the
visual
style, style,
because
the sound waves.
So many visual gags in the comic. It's just full of them, which what is actually what makes it so enjoyable. But yeah, he did that. Incredibly.
Numero Zero says, I just want to say real quick
that
Michael Cera. What does that mean? Anyway.
Maybe like comma, Snake, that Michael Cera isn't that Michael Cera.
Well, and if that is what he was trying to say, I'll actually double that. I'll actually concur with that and say Michael Cera has gone up a few steps in my
No, to be honest, I'm sorry, dude, I wouldn't go that far. I don't think he's gone up steps. It's just that was perfect casting.
Well, not just was it perfect casting, though. He actually embodied
Scott Pilgrim. If you
rather than
character.
Just play himself,
because
he embodied
Josh,
Scott Pilgrim.
You haven't read all of the comics. If you know the Scott Pilgrim as a character, he's not just some guy who's into computer games. He actually has.
He's not just an awkward nerd.
Yeah,
there is a lot
he's
more
got,
to
there's
him.
There's a lot more
and
to him.
Actually,
he has
no,
a character. And I think Michael Cera played that character really, really well.
Yeah, exactly. But in the exact same thing, I still stick to the fact that even if that was the case, that was still Michael Cera.
Oh, yeah.
It was a well-cast version of Michael Cera, as in he fitted the character perfectly, but he wasn't playing outside himself. I'm sorry, but Michael Cera is yet to break what Michael Cera is to me. Mm. I have not seen him in a movie.
Except when would you have ever thought that Michael Cera could have handled action scenes as well as he handled them? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he trained well, he trained hard, and
he went in there
and he gave it his all. Mm. And Michael Cera actually was...
As an example, dude, Tobey Maguire was... Still, when he played Spider-Man, to me, he was still the Tobey Maguire I knew, and always will be. When he played in Brothers, he changed that for me.
True.
I sat there and went, wow, that was an out-of-character, that is a real actor's ability. Michael Cera is still playing Michael Cera. And that's,
I guess. Yeah,
he's young,
yeah,
he'll have many chances.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not judging for that. It's just...
the question is, will he have many chances, though? Because that brings us to a point about Scott Pilgrim, which, of course, is that it's died at the box office.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
This is because I remember when I first came to you, I said that it sells in so many aspects and so on and so forth. The problem was, when I actually thought about that for a little longer, I realized what I was saying was actually the reason it was going to fail, because it hit so many different points that unless you're a fan of all of them, you will miss this movie entirely.
Yeah.
Like, we've already learned this by a lot of our friends that have gone and seen it, and there's actually debate between them because people are going, I got this, and this,
but the movie failed because
I didn't get this.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't get all parts of
it. We were actually talking about it. There's like a sphere where you can look at and basically say that on the outskirts of that sphere, you've got all the various subsects of geekdom. You've got gamers, you've got comic book people, you've got... And there's a nucleus. In the middle, which is like this geek, right? And the geek,
the quintessential
geek who likes video games, likes comics, likes everything.
Indie culture. Yeah,
that is who Scott Pilgrim is aimed at, right?
It's it even goes further than that, because some of the best moments of the film are actually winks to people that are huge film fans. Mm. Like, as an example, the awesome vegan police scene, which has both Tom Jane...
It's actually been brought up in our chat room
already. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Which was just fantastic, but would absolutely
Clifton Collins
mean
Jr.
nothing.
All I gotta say is Clifton Collins fucking Jr., all right?
Yeah, that scene with those two people, you only get if you're a true fan just like film as a general, because you see those two people and you're like, why are you even here? That is amazing.
And I actually thought when we sat down to watch the movie, I actually wondered whether the vegan police scene would even come in, because it is a really obscure little scene in the comic book, and you go, how will that translate? But then the wall breaks down and in walk Clifton Collins Jr. And Thomas Jane. And you sit there and go, oh my God, they're actually going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, they're actually going to go that far. I actually really, really enjoyed it. I just had an absolute blast watching this film. I understand it's not going to be for everybody.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting what you were saying about that whole, the geek orb with the nucleus in the center. Yeah. Same thing with the comics. I bought a number one for a friend of mine who is totally into all the exact same things as me. She's just not as much of a gamer as I am.
Yeah.
And she hated it. She was like, I hated it. I couldn't get into it. I was like, are you kidding? You love Mario and you love Legend of Zelda. So she's like, yeah, meh. It was just a stupid indie thing.
What I will say about Scott Pilgrim, though, is that if you've only just started it and gone, yeah, I don't get into it, and you put it down, same thing happened to me. I actually false started the comics of Scott Pilgrim about five times, where you read the first five pages over and over and over again and then go, nah, it's not for me, and you keep putting it down.
Mm.
When I finally decided that I had to finish reading it because the movie was coming out, by about 20 issues into the first issue, I was hooked.
Mm. Yeah.
And I managed to polish off all six volumes in the space of a couple of days.
It's just so easy.
It just flows by. And as soon as you get locked into the characters, as soon as you accept his world, it just...
And you accept the ridiculousness of it all.
Absolutely. As soon as you accept that ridiculousness of it, you just go, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just go for the ride.
You kind of have to accept it and relax into it and be like, yeah, cool. Like, it is a fusion of a video game and a kind of teen indie drama.
That's right. And this is... I was actually watching the Margaret Pomerantz and David Stratton, and they were actually saying, oh, you know, it's so obviously just aimed at 20-year-olds and stuff like that. I go, no, it's not.
Yeah. Mm.
There are so many references to my age group. It's not aimed at an age group. It's aged at a culture, at a subculture.
Out of curiosity, what did they give it?
Margaret gave it 2. She hated it, and I think David actually gave it like 3.5 or 4. He actually didn't mind it. He said it was okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, she'd sit there and look at it and go, she just didn't get it.
I think the references were just lost on
that.
That's
right. Yeah. And this is not a film that you can intellectually analyze. You can't sit there and go,
I feel
how
sorry.
Is the drama? How is this?
Yeah, it's like
you
it's
just
not meant
go
to be.
For the
yeah,
ride,
it's just got
to
be
you know?
A fun ride. And well, it was that. It was totally entertaining.
Well, look, I mean, I really, I wish the best for Edgar Wright because, I mean, he has the third of the Cornetto trilogy coming up. And I think that will make a lot more money.
Interestingly enough, I heard an interview with him the other day and they asked him about when that was coming. And he said, at this point in time, they have no plan on it. At this point, he said, what they're doing is, they said, when the time and the moment is right and it all falls into place, they will just do it.
Wait, what are you talking about?
No, because this film he's working on right now apparently isn't the third in that series.
The one with Simon Frost.
Yeah, it's not actually part of that. It's something else that they're working on because he said they... just need to make sure that they get everything right.
Everything right.
Well,
go for gold. Take as
absolutely.
Long as he wants because he's,
no,
there's so
fine,
much love in his films that
yeah, this interview
would,
was actually
if he forced a film, it would be obvious.
That kind of makes me sad, though, because the very fact that they're putting the two characters in a film together again means that we're going to get that same feeling. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. Those two characters will always just play the friends in the movie, like no matter how hard
but it
they
depends
try.
On... what kind of story he's telling and stuff like that will be whether or not it fits in with that trilogy.
No, but anyway, either way, what I was saying was I wish him the best because I really think that what's going to happen with this film, he may not make money on it, but it'll be one of those films that 10 years from now will become the cult classic.
Oh, this
film
having worked
is destined
having worked
to be
in
that.
Video retail for 13 years of my life many years ago, I can tell you right now, I can already predict this film becoming a cult sensation once it hits DVD Blu-ray. Mm. This film will kind of mediocrely slide along in the box office and then disappear.
Yeah.
5 months later will show up, and over the course of the next year, everybody will own a copy.
Mm.
It's just going to be one of those films that happens that way.
Yeah.
People will discover it. Mm-hmm.
Because I can see a lot of people missing it.
There you go.
Yes.
Edgar Wright isn't directing Paul, that's why.
Oh, there you go.
Peg and Frost are starring, but he's not directing it.
Ah,
so.
Okay.
Well, there we go.
He's involved in it somehow, though,
maybe
I think.
Maybe producing it.
Maybe.
Maybe.
It's directed by the guy. Oh, great. It's directed by the super bad guy. Yay.
Now, who is that? That's,
I don't know.
Isn't that the same person who directed...
40-Year-Old Virgin or whatnot?
Keep talking. I will look that up.
Yeah.
No, it's not 40-Year-Old Virgin.
No,
you're thinking
not.
Judd
that's,
Apatow.
That's Judd Apatow. No, that's
not Apatow.
Yes, no, but what was I saying? I wish the best for this guy because, like I said, I think this will become a cult classic, and I think it's going to be one of those films that will kind of be in conversation when you're talking about favorite films, someone will bring it up and say, oh, did you watch this? And then you'll say no, and then that person will get loaned it, and then they'll go out and buy it. So yeah, it will virally become a cult classic. And it's kind of the second you walk out of the film, if you are a huge fan of it, you can just look at it and go, there is something in this film for everyone, but everyone will miss it the first time. And I just, I really feel that that's what we're going to have with this film.
Okay, the director of Superbad, by the way, is Greg Mottola. Okay, so. Okay.
Well, I wasn't a fan of Superbad, so.
I really quite enjoyed Superbad, actually, because he is McLovin.
Well, so, everyone knows I'm not a huge comedy. I'm not a huge comedy guy, and
Well, I mean, Paul, I've got Paul up right here. Comedy science fiction starring Jason Bateman, Seth Rogen, Simon Pegg, Jane Lynch. Doesn't actually mention
Nick Frost.
Nick Frost is in there though, because we've got production
Written by Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. And he's probably got one of the smaller roles in it because look at that cast. Anyway, and I'll make you a bet. I'm going to put down money. I'm going to find it out right now. I'm going to put down money that actually says it's produced by Judd Apatow. What's the bet? what's the bet on this?
You can just kind of imagine him just walking in and being like, okay, so Judd, I need some money here. And just gives him a whole bag of money and goes, go make a movie.
Checkbook.
So I'm just
if you haven't failed yet, just
I'm bringing up the producer's credits right now, and we're going to find out. Drum roll, please. Produced by... Oh, no. Wow, his name's not in the listing at all. All right. There you go.
Moving right along.
All right, so long and the short of it is that if you are willing to go along for the ride, you're willing to accept this world.
If you're willing to accept the things that this film is going to throw at you, like... Flaming swords out of the chest.
Cunning vegans, bad guys, vegans, coins.
Vegans having superpowers. What else?
When you die, you turn into a pile of coins.
XP.
Fantastic visual KO. Gags, like when he jumps out of the window. It was just fantastic. Yeah.
If you're willing to accept all of these things, then you're going to enjoy this film. Now, I just want to say, it's actually in one of the trailers. It wasn't in that one, but it has been shown in one of the trailers, so it's not really a spoiler. But I think my favorite sight gag in the entire film is where Knives Chow comes to the door and, and he says, I'm sorry, Scott's not here, and you see him bolt through the window.
Well, not bolt, smash through the window.
And then grab his coat, and then you get a shot of Knives, and you see him walk past in the background.
One of the best sight gags, and even if you've heard about it, until you've seen it, it doesn't resonate.
Actually, can we please stop for a minute and just talk about Kieran Culkin, who really steals the show in the entire film as his gay roommate,
Wallace,
who is just, he is there
just
for, every line he drops is gold.
And it's picture perfect to the character in the comic.
Well, because in the comic, Wallace steals the show in the comic as well, because Wallace is just one of the most dry but hilarious characters in the whole comic.
And he's always got those one-liners that will just come up every time. Every time, like, the fights ensue or something like that. One of my favorites is when he takes on Chris Evans' character.
Yeah.
And just, like, he's already on the ground. And there's a fight about to erupt. And he's like, by the way, impulsive, sort of happy speech. Go for gold, go nuts. And just walks up with a coffee, And it's just, it's like, I'm here for you. I'll be over there when you need me. And just takes off.
He's terrific. I think... if we look at the two Culkin brothers, or if we look at the Culkin family, we can say that Kieran is definitely the one that I would rather
have been watching. I want to see this kid do more. Yeah. I mean, like I was saying when we left the cinema, that Igby Goes Down, he is just...
I still haven't seen Igby Goes Down.
Igby Goes Down, he is just a show stealer. He really, like, this is the film that, at the time, people interviews everywhere, because it was just like, this kid is dynamite. He was just really... good at what he did, and he played very similar kind of character, downbeat and obviously, sort of not that emotional at all, and probably has been the kid that was kind of undershadowed for his entire childhood, like in reality, because of his brother and so on and so forth. And it was just, he disappeared. He never showed up in anything of merit, and then someone gives him a shot in this. I really hope, if nothing else, that this gives him push into actually doing some more
Snake Oz in the chat room is basically, I love how everyone ends up in his bed at the same time. I just
love that one point where there's three people in the bed.
They all just keep sitting up in the,
Look, the film is really out of its mind, and I love that about it. I love the fact that Edgar Wright basically said, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this the comic book, and we're just going to go
nuts. And even though the endings are slightly different, without giving away any plot, the endings are slightly different, and...
And there's actually from... one issue of the ending, which we won't give it away, but there's one issue of the ending I think actually weakens it a little bit compared to
and
the
also
comic
the
book.
Whole subspace highway thing is explored a lot more in the comics as well. Like, they've cut, even though they have cut elements of the comics out, it still works brilliantly. And even though they've changed the ending, it's still fantastic.
Yeah, the ending still works, but it actually had, in the comic book, it actually had a resonance because it was about Ramona's choices.
Yeah.
And in the film, without
it's
giving it away...
It's more about Scott.
They take away her freedom of choice, you know, the little subplot that I'm thinking about that they've added. And that, to me, kind of took away a little bit of the momentum or a little bit of the meaning of her choices by making it that it wasn't her choices.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think that kind of weakened it a little bit in its final act, but it still works.
It still works brilliantly, and the whole film altogether was fantastic. The pacing was great, even though you'd assume to be really, really fast paced at times. It does slow down and take its time, and that works fantastically because it means it's
my concern was
an exhausting film to watch.
To have seven battles in one film like this is going to become repetitive.
Exactly.
And it
wasn't.
It actually works very well.
It wasn't an exhausting film to watch. It didn't feel repetitive. At no point it got boring. It was just really, really on the spot every time.
And the film
and the comic
well.
Timing was amazing, and it flowed beautifully.
It did. I think so. And let's not say any more without mentioning Chris Evans.
Yes,
because Chris Evans is a legend.
Casting, just the casting of the whole bundle of actors, known and unknown, that they put in there. The casting was fantastic.
Look, I don't care.
They
who
even
they,
looked the part.
Yeah. I don't care who they have in casting. I've always had a feeling in every Edgar Wright project that you can tell that he is so hands-on with the casting because
totally.
Those are his picks.
Yeah.
You can tell. And, like, he just looks at people and he can see
that character
in them. And you can tell. He just looked at Chris Evans, and he will never say this to his face, but he just went, douche. You can do douche. And look, he sells it so well.
He does.
And that just that moment that you see in the trailer with a, hey, yo, what's up? This is nice. It's just the quintessential douche lines all strung into one sentence, which is fantastic. I am hoping, as you were saying, Dave, that we will see some sort of extended scene for that scene because I think that scene is cut. I get the feeling it's cut because it goes completely white for a absolute split second when he punches him after saying you don't know anything about the League of the League of Ex-Boyfriends, and then he goes, no, I don't. He goes, oh, well,
you
know,
give your hand,
and he goes to give him a hand. That cuts so white and so obvious that it is a cut that I reckon there is a scene.
Because in the comic book, we discuss it, in the comic book, there's a whole scene in the middle there where they sit and have coffee while he discusses the situation.
I really hope there's an alternate scene.
It would be interesting to see.
An extended cut would be fantastic.
Because you
know
why?
There's more of those little kind of weird scenes that they cut out.
Because the reason that I think that scene is there and I think the scene has been removed is because Edgar Wright wanted the pace to be perfect, right? Mm. And he didn't want it to slow down. That scene would have slowed down the whole fight.
Yeah,
which would
have also
lost
because
people.
We've already had an explanation given by Patel earlier in the film. So to have a second explanation, even though it would have been more detailed, would have slowed things down. The pacing would have been wrong. Mm. And Edgar Wright is actually on record as saying that he tried to make this film. This film has thousands of shots.
Yeah.
And the reason it has thousands of shots, he said he never wanted any two shots to be the same.
Yeah.
So when all the cuts in it, nothing is ever the same.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's just a monumental undertaking to make something like that actually work. So, you know, credit to him. The other person I want to mention is Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who actually plays Ramona. I'm actually a fan of hers, and I've been...
What else has she been
in? She was in Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard, Die Hard 4 for Australians, as the daughter, McLean's daughter.
Yeah.
And she was in that dance film that came out, which I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Chat room might be able to help me out. She shows up in all these little things like this, and I've been waiting for her to have a breakout role because I like her. Oh, she was in... Grindhouse as well. She was in Tarantino's Death Proof. She was the one in the cheerleader. Was she the cheerleader? Yeah, she was the cheerleader who was passed out.
Yeah.
And you sit there and go, I want you to have a breakout role because there's something about her. There's a nice energy about her. I like her a lot and I want to see more of her.
Yeah.
And yet she doesn't seem to ever be able to break.
I don't know. There's always a sense of almost sleepiness to her. I don't know. I can't explain it. It's like there seems to be a lack of momentum behind her.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe she's just not driven in her career.
Yeah, no. Well, or maybe at some stage it'll click and she'll just change as a personality.
I mean, she did that terrible film, The Dance Film, which was a terrible film, mind you. But she can dance. I mean, she started as a dancer and became an actress, and she moves really well. It's unfortunate. It was a really bad film. Yeah. It was no step up. You know, it's like, or whatever. You know, didn't even have the box office appeal of one of those films. But so I'm waiting for it to see her break out a little bit more. And the other one that I think is of note is Anna Kendrick, of course, as the sister, Scott's sister, who you see in the trailer.
Who's had a few small roles. Apart from Up in the Air, she had a fairly... a hefty supporting role in that, but she's great.
What I was about to say is that we've actually discussed her before because we hated her in Twilight because she was the ditzy friend in Twilight. Damn, my lip bibs look good in this, right? You know, and all sort of crap. And she was awful. And then she showed up in Up in the Air. Josh and I just completely took a 180 degree turn on this girl because it was like she's fantastic.
Yeah.
And she's only got a very small role here, but she's very funny again. Yeah. And once again, she's another one. I want to see her do more with her career. And I can't wait till Twilight is over. Because once Twilight is over, she might be able to do more up in the air.
I can detach the stigma.
It's not just a matter of the stigma. She's busy. She's locked into this Twilight world. Let her get out of that, and maybe she can actually do something more with her career. Okay, recommendations. We've got to move on. Do you recommend it to a friend?
I would recommend it to anybody and everybody. I would recommend it even to my parents, but I would say to them, it's an entertaining film. There are a few references that you might not get. But it's still a lot of fun. Actually, that's the thing. It is a really fun movie.
And this is a very important point.
I don't mean this in a really negative way, because when you say switch your brain off, you kind of think it's just going to be a really shit, tacky film. If you can, though, sort of just accept it as a fun action film, and maybe for some people who wouldn't understand the, you know, kind of references, if they could just kind of overlook that, it is still a great film.
Yeah.
It's still a really enjoyable film.
I would say to anyone, if nothing else, it's an experience.
It's a lot of fun.
I would say, our generation that we can kind of point out and say, like, you know, I mean, not to give it sort of this much kudos because that's pushing it a little bit far, but kind of the Wall-esque or something like that, where even if you're not into the music, you can still sell it to somebody because of the experience that comes attached to it.
Well, I was about to say, the other thing to keep in mind for those who are listening to this and the audio later and are going, but it looks really outrageous and crazy. When we say disengage your brain, it's not about disengaging your brain. It's because the one thing about Scott Pilgrim...
It's about just having fun.
It's about having fun. Because the one thing about Scott Pilgrim that's really, really well done is the fact that it may be out of its mind, but there is an internal logic to the film, and it always adheres to its own internal logic. I mean, so it creates its own rules and then sticks to its own rules. So it's not completely out of control. It knows what it's doing.
But if we want to scrape off that geeky layer and get to the sweet, sweet cake underneath, it is just overall a great film because it has fantastic casting. It's shot beautifully. The special effects are great. The script is fantastic. It has a brilliant soundtrack. Whoever did the songs, wrote the songs for the bands, did a really, really good job, because that was one thing I was worried about, the music in it, because it is quite a musical film.
We've been playing the soundtrack at work lately, and it's
awesome. There's a lot of great music in it and great acting. So just as a film,
is the name of the composer, I think.
Just as a film, it's in itself, it's a great film. There are a whole lot of geeky references that people might not get, and it is really fast-paced, which might piss some people off. But underneath it all, it's a really good film. So go see it because it's a good film.
There's also to note for the soundtrack listeners, there's actually two soundtracks available for it. They're identical covers. One's blue and one's red. One is the score and one is the songs. And both are really good albums. The score is this really unique album because it's a modern score with these 8-bit sounds going through it, and it's a really interesting score. It's not an easy listening score, but it's a really interesting score. And then the soundtrack has got all the songs of Sex Bob-ombs and all
that are all brilliant.
And it's so much fun, you know. And yes, it's a bit thrashy in places, but that's kind of the point. But if you want like the bass battle, that's on the score. Because that's by the composer. So
it's actually really interesting. I love that. I love that as a concept because of the very Guitar Hero-esque reference to that. And it's actually funny because if you guys play the 8-bit game, when you actually get up to him as a boss, it has a screen with him playing like a giant sea of notes, and all you've got to do is hit one, and you just smack him with the guitar, which I thought was awesome.
Snake says that he's conflicted now because he was going to kill everyone involved in the Twilight movies. Well, I'm sorry, you can't kill her. She's good. Yeah. Okay. All right, so we're going to move on. I'm going to say, yes, I recommend it with caveats, I'm going to say, look, it's not going to be to everyone's taste.
It's not necessarily going to be to Margaret's taste,
obviously. Yeah. You know, it's not going to be...
But still, you can look underneath that and see that it's underneath all of the geeky references, it's still just a good film.
It's still just a love story.
And it's a well-made film all round.
I'm one of these people that doesn't usually sell people a film. Like, if I look at you and I know enough about your personality, I won't suggest a film that I don't think you'll enjoy. Mm. This is one of those few cases where I'll just say to everyone, just go watch it anyway, because it's like, it's if you don't like it, I'm still right. It's still a good film, so fuck you. And that's myself.
That's my 2 cents.
Well said, sir. All right, we're going to move away from Scott Pilgrim, and we're going to have a little bit of entertainment buzz. We basically pretty much got rid of all news this week because, quite frankly, it's a shitty week for news anyway. And so, but we do have a couple of trailers I thought we'd have a quick look at. First trailer up is Wes Craven's new film. Now, I got to say, Wes Craven is always an interesting filmmaker. Mm. Whether he completely succeeds, like Scream or Nightmare on Elm Street, or completely fails, like People Under the Stairs, he's still interesting.
Can you stop with the bad ones?
Well, he's still interesting, if nothing else. He comes up with interesting ideas.
People he's a Under the Stairs... Man.
Had interesting ideas, it just wasn't very well executed, you know?
Didn't he do They as well? Wasn't that him?
They? No, no, it's William Friedkin. No, no, that was Buck. No,
wait. No, I'm going to look that up.
He might have done that one, I'm not sure. Anyway, but he also is responsible for a couple of films that I actually rate as some of my favorites, and they're really underrated little films. One of them is The Serpent and the Rainbow, I think, which is a really, really underrated little thriller. Not a horror film, funnily enough, and loosely based on true events about Haitian voodoo and zombies and, you know, the whole zombification in Haiti and all that sort of stuff. Really interesting film. Unfortunately, weak ending, great first half of the film.
He did They.
I haven't seen
and
They.
And They is really shit.
Okay, well, that goes up there with
but cool concepts.
Once again, cool concepts. Mm. Anyway, so he's come out. Now, he's working on Scream 4. We've heard about this going on for a while. Mm. I don't know what that's going to be like. But somehow... he found the time to make another film while he's working on Scream 4. This is what Wes Craven does. And this is
pretty much how he rolls.
This is how he rolls. He just kind of slips films out, like when he slipped out Red Eye. And I'm one of the few people who actually really liked Red Eye. I thought Red Eye was...
Still a film that I haven't seen. I didn't
think it was...
saw Red Eye...
Again, that falls into the second class of his for mine, which is that I think it was a very interesting concept...
I think Red Eye is flawed.
That deserves credit for Cillian Murphy.
No, for Cillian Murphy and her. Her name has gone out of my head. But you gotta say, a film that can hold your attention for 45 minutes, because the first 45 minutes is just the two of them sitting in a chair.
Yeah.
And the two of them manage to hold this tension for 45 minutes of that film.
Wow.
Unfortunately... the second half of the film is the weak part of the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it lets itself down a little bit. But that first 45 minutes is Wes Craven in top form.
Mm.
That is where Cillian Murphy and, God, what's her name? Rachel McAdams, hold you in this absolute tension for 45 minutes of them sitting on the plane.
Mm.
And you sit there and go, wow, this is flight plan could learn lessons from this, you know?
Mm.
Unfortunately, it kind of falls into generic genre in the end.
Oh,
however... his new film is a generic genre horror film.
You know what? You know why it failed for me? That film failed because the second half of it fell into bad 90s thriller territory.
Mm.
That's why. It finished like happy endings.
That's right.
And that was exactly what
and
you didn't
I was
want.
Actually waiting in the second half. I was waiting for some surprise to come out of me. And there was nothing surprising in the second half. Whereas the first half was so good. So I would recommend the film, though, because the first half is so good. You know?
Mm.
And the second half isn't awful. It's just... it's
mediocre.
Just predictable, you know? And so you sit there and go, it's let itself down. But the first half is really, really stunning. Now, the new film by Wes Craven is called My Soul to Take. And I wrote on the post when I put up this on geekactually.com, you can go see this trailer at geekactually.com. Mm. I said it was really weird because it's kind of like a little bit of Nightmare on Elm Street, a little bit of Scream, a little bit of Friday the 13th, even, which he didn't make, and then kind of... rolled it all together with a dash of My Bloody Valentine on top of it. And you sit there and go, wow, this is just a strange mix of stuff, you know? And she looks interesting. I wouldn't mind seeing it. So here's My Soul to Take.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord... my soul to take.
No! Please! No!
What just happened?
My name is Adam Hellerman, but everyone calls me Bug. I live in Riverton, Massachusetts, a small town notable for fishing, tourism, and the Riverton Ripper.
The Ripper was killed 16 years ago today, the very night that seven of us here were born. Some say we share more than just a birthday.
They found Jay Chan in the river this morning. He's dead. Pray for our souls, Bug. He's coming.
Hello?
There's been no clue as to who this killer might be.
If he was evil enough, somebody you thought was dead come back alive?
Souls live on.
Do you think the Ripper came back to take his revenge? What if his soul went into one of the seven kids who were born the night he died?
Bug?
Pray for our souls, Bug.
But which one?
Do you know who your father was? Take a look in the mirror, Bug.
You killed people, Bug. Not that I can remember.
You want to mess with someone? Mess with me.
I like the nod to Nightmare on Elm Street with the hand coming out of the wall at the end. It's such a Nightmare on Elm Street nod. Also, there's that winged creature at the end. So it's got these kind of obscure images that are really move really quickly at the very end of it. So what looks like it's going to be just completely generic, you sit there and go, wait.
Yeah.
And I actually took back the trailer a couple of times when I first
saw it. Well,
that's
the thing, because it looks really kind of predictable. Like Josh was sitting here going, my God, I already know what's going to happen. But they kind of give it away in the trailer. So you think there'd be some other element or some other level to it that he's going to surprise us
with.
Wes
Craven is cleverer than that.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
If it was just a generic slasher film, he's already done that five times. You know, he already did Scream even, which is sending up its own genre, you know? I don't think he's just going to want to do another generic one. So there's got to be more to it than that. Anyone know the name of that song?
I don't know, dude. Google it, man.
Google it. Just look up song in My Soul to Take trailer, and you'll find it. I find stuff like
It'll
that
It'll be
all
some
the time.
Teeny emo band.
All right, we have one other trailer which we're going to run through, then we're going to get into our second film review. This trailer I'm playing for one reason only, and that is Darren Aronofsky. Okay, now, when I first heard, and I said this to Josh, but once again, you can see this at geekactually.com if you're on the audio. When I heard that Darren Aronofsky was doing a film about ballet, I went, pardon? I said to Josh, I said, my first thought was, let me see, is it about an aging ballerina who can't dance anymore because of some medical condition and then has to kind of get in touch with her life and her... No, wait a minute, this is the wrestler we're talking about, right? So I thought...
He deserves a little bit more credit.
So too. And so my first thought was, what the hell is he going to do with it? Then that striking poster image came out. With the black eyes, and I thought, this is something else. And then I watched the trailer.
There's a dark tone to it when you look straight at it.
Yeah.
And then I watched this trailer, and I thought, this is not what
I
you
saved,
expect.
I saved this one, so I'm looking forward to this.
So here is Darren Aronofsky's new film, Black Swan, starring Natalie Portman.
I had the craziest dream last night about a girl who was turned into a swan, but her prince falls for the wrong girl, and she kills herself. He promised to feature me more this season.
Well, he should. You've been there long enough. And you're the most dedicated dancer in the company.
Our new swan queen, the exquisite Nina Sayers.
I'm Lily. You're gonna be amazing.
Watch the way she moves. Sensual. She's not faking it.
Seduces! Attack it! Attack it! Come on!
Where'd you get these?
It's nothing.
You sweet girl.
Feel my touch. Respond to it.
Someone's hot for teacher. I don't want to talk about that.
You really need to relax. It's the role, isn't it? It's all this pressure. I knew it'd be too much. I knew it.
What's she doing here? He made me your alternate.
The only person standing in your way is you.
How do you know where I live?
I have my ways.
She's after me.
Nobody's after you.
Please believe me.
Sweet girl. What happened to my sweet girl? She's gone!
I don't know about you guys, but that gives me chills.
Yeah, really, really,
that's what
really
that's the Aronofsky
fun.
I love.
Yeah,
that's what I want.
That's the
wow.
Aronofsky where we sit there and go. It starts off so
you're like, yeah,
and
yeah,
go,
cool,
yeah, and then
cool,
it's
man.
Like,
you're like,
wait, where are we going?
Well, because the other thing that immediately
that
comes
so
to
intriguing.
Mind, and I really hope this doesn't wreck some important plot twist, but is there the possibility that they're both the same girl? That's the thing that immediately when I look at the trailer, I'm like, wow. Because, again, it seems like one of those films where that's... she's pulling shit out of it. There's no way that that's where we're going with the trailer. But when I look at it immediately, it says to me that it's like, wow, how fucked up is this?
Yeah,
like,
and there's that one shot I love where she's standing in front of the mirror and she starts to turn and the mirror image is turning faster than she is. And I think that's a really...
This film is going to go to...
Looks like it's
going to
be visually. It looks like it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, which is a nice. Which for Aronofsky would be a nice change because the wrestler is so raw and very handheld and everything. So this is like going back to things like what was the what's it called, the fountain territory where it's all very pretty, you know?
Yeah,
you know?
The fountain.
The fountain's not one of my favorite films, but it looks beautiful. I mean, it's just
terrible film.
Yeah, we won't go into that right now. But the fountain, I spent the entire film in the fountain going, huh?
I was just going, are you going somewhere with this?
the most frustrating part of the fountain is you can't help watching it. So you sit
I have actually not seen it.
You watch it and you sit there going, okay, where's this going? Where's this going? You watch it and you watch it and you watch it. All the way through the film, you watch it going, where's it going? Where's it going? And then it ends. And you go, what?
Where was it going?
Where did it go?
Somebody please tell me what the hell is going on.
No, and I'm going to combat that, Northy. Northy in the chat room says that I've watched too much Secret Window. I'm sorry, Secret Window is too much the basic, sort of the revamped version of something I've seen 1,000 times before that.
Alan Callison says Fight Club ballerina style.
Oh, yes. That'd be cool. And then all the ballerinas start fighting. And, yeah, no, that's just my movie. I'd like to see skinny bitches fighting each other.
Let's move on.
You'll move right on.
All
right,
we're gonna have a quick review.
I think you're mixing up your movies. I think you're thinking about Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're gonna end up running long today because
sorry.
Gonna end up running long today because we've got another film review. So let's do this right now and say the second film review for today is Sylvester Stallone's The Expendables.
Yay!
All right, now. Directed by Sylvester Stallone and written by Sylvester Stallone and David Callahan. It stars Sylvester Stallone, Jason Statham, Jet Li, Dolph Lundgren, Eric Roberts, Randy Couture, Steve Austin, Mickey Rourke, Terry Crews, David Zayas, Gary Daniels, Giselle. Now, I'm going to massacre this last part because I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it's Giselle Ite, I think, and Charisma Carpenter, although I don't know why she's listed in the starring roles at all. Once again, this synopsis is taken from IMDb, just to save me some time this week. Barney Ross leads the Expendables, a band of highly skilled mercenaries, including knife enthusiast Lee Christmas, martial arts expert Yin Yang, heavy weapons specialist Hail Caesar, demolitionist Toll Road, these names, and loose cannon sniper Gunnar Jensen, when the group is commissioned by a mysterious Mr. Church to assassinate the merciless dictator of a small South American island. Barney and Lee head to the remote locale to scout out their opposition. Once there, they meet with local rebel Sandra and discover the true nature of the conflicting engulfing.
Okay,
conflict.
Synopsis is better written than the entire plot
pretty
to this
much.
Film. I just wanted to say that out loud.
True nature of the conflict engulfing the city. When they escape the island and Sandra stays behind, Ross must choose to either walk away and save his own life or attempt a suicidal rescue mission that might just save his soul.
Oh my god, I got none of this from the film. Wow.
And just to help us out, here's the trailer.
Oh god.
They are the world's greatest mercenaries. The only life they've ever known is war. The only loyalty they've ever had is to each other.
Drop your guns!
I got the four on the left.
Why don't you take the two on the right and leave the rest?
You're not that fast anymore.
Oh, here we go.
The only thing faster is...
light.
Exactly.
We'll see.
Well, I got three pieces of work.
Two a walk in the park, and one to hell and back.
So, we are working for the agency.
I gotta recon this island first.
The only thing you need to know is the job's real and the money's real.
Give this job to my friend here. He loves playing in the jungle, right?
Right.
It's his problem.
Was that the contact?
Follow me, please. People who fight back are killed. Now you have a dying place. Maybe you can help.
I don't think so. Allow you, I'd leave. What's wrong with this picture?
Everything.
We don't have the manpower, the firepower. We'd be dead in the water.
Ray, they got a small army. What do we got? 4.5 men.
That's so funny. You know, it's not easy being your friend.
We will kill this American disease.
I promise myself, I don't want to die for something that counts.
People live for terrible times, but you must believe you can survive.
10 seconds, you won't believe what's going to happen.
What happened to you?
I got my ass kicked.
You're welcome.
Every one of us is expendable.
Got a problem with that.
Oh. All right, Celine is cringing, so I guess she wants to go first.
No, I don't want to go first.
Okay, fine, I'll go first. All right, I want to start by explaining that when in 20 years from now we have movie marathons, like I do even now, and we pick out the worst action films that will keep me entertained, this will be one of my first choices.
Damn,
and I will be owning this on DVD. Why? Because it is terrible.
It's just really
it
bad.
Redefines terrible in the fact that it is just so... It's built in the best way you could possibly create every aspect of why action films in the 80s are really terrible. And they've put it all into one film. And that's what makes it great. Because 80s action films are so politically incorrect. They're so wrong.
I'm so glad you just added that word in there, though, because that's exactly how I feel. This film is awful. But it's so great at the same time. You sit there and you watch it going...
Every possible stereotype is in this film. It is amazing. Even the beaten women, it's just all in there.
The beaten women, the jokes about, you know, sort of like people's size and race. And you know.
Sit there and you go, and you find yourself in the movie going like this.
Just anytime there's any form of dialogue, we were all groaning. I'm sorry, I heard all three of us groan.
And then they pull out the machine guns and you go, yeah!
Like, it's just the dialogue is so bad and the storyline is
Spenny Tune in the chat room says, the eye close-ups made me laugh.
Yes! Way too many close-ups, and I said this during the movie. I said, this is the ugliest cast a film has ever had. There are way too many close-ups on way too many old dudes' faces, and they're like this close.
Okay, it's Josh,
like
you're gonna
his
say
his face and his lip is like just hanging out.
Push
and,
past her.
No, sorry, I was enjoying that. I was gonna get that finish. No, look. All right, let's break this down as a film before we start getting too far away from it. Look, as a film, because obviously, even though I am a geek, the film reviewer part comes before anything. This film is atrocious. Like, it is quite possibly... It doesn't deserve the cast it's got. And
it doesn't deserve the box office
No, I think this film completely deserves the cast.
Well, it deserves the cast, but it doesn't deserve the money behind the cast. Because, like, if this film was about anything else, we would actually have hated it. Because the cuts are absolutely terrible. The editing is just
shocking.
It's just shocking. It's butcher quality.
The CG is so terrible.
Like, literally, I imagine whoever did the cutting for this film actually using a butcher knife to cut the stills.
He cut really badly because he was so busy laughing at the film that he was
I'm sorry, Dave, completely disagree. There would be no laughing involved in whoever had to edit this, because they'd just be sitting there with everything in this film on his wall, and Strip's just going, how the fuck do I put those together? That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
I kind of feel really sorry for whoever had to edit that film.
It's badly shot.
We
actually made the point that Mickey Rourke actually seems to spend the entire film with a smirk on his face.
He looks like almost he's like laughing.
Almost like, why the hell am I here?
He's like, why am I being paid for this?
Yeah. No, look, and for the first probably 45 minutes, I was not actually sold on the film. The dialogue destroyed the film for me. I was just sitting there going, Jesus, would you just stop? Because there was a realization at about the 30-minute mark that I realized that all the love that I had for this leading up to it forgot one important factor. You see, I had pieced together all the same parts in my mind. I knew that this was going to be a giant action film. It was going to be quintessentially 80s. It was going to have a terrible script. The dialogue was probably going to be awful. But what I hadn't realized is just how awful it would be to have all these bad action stars and no comic relief and no decent actors supporting them
or anything like that.
There's nothing else in this film apart from those people. And I was like, Jesus, what have I got myself into? None of these people can act.
The idea of this film obviously looked good on paper.
Yeah.
Let's bring back all these aging action stars from the heyday of this kind of film, put them all together and have a lot of fun. You're right. I think they didn't think it through to the end.
It's like what I said the other day. They had all the elements to make a really fun action movie. They just didn't have any glue to stick them together. They had all these little pieces.
Alison's in the chat room says that the comic relief was the plot.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But that's the thing. They had all these little pieces, but they just couldn't stick them together. They were just kind of trying to mash them all together, and it was totally unsuccessful.
Absolutely. And we didn't mention them in the cast list because, quite frankly, they only are in one scene. But in the trailer, you see Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis. Probably the most awkward scene in the film.
No, but that... I'm sorry, but that is the reason I love that scene. Because that scene was... It's the recollection of the three heads you're not supposed to have in the same movie. These guys are supposed to overshadow each other, right? So when you have them in the scene, it should be awkwardly tense. It's like if you got an interview with those three guys on a news
show. But it wasn't fun awkward. Yeah. It was just...
Oh, no, I disagree. I'm sorry. I did actually find that scene incredibly funny. That was always going to be the case. We were throwing these guys together in a room. I knew it was going to be horribly awkward. That was what made me laugh so much, because the dialogue is actually funny because none of them want to say these lines because they are actually attacking their personalities.
That's true.
And that's why I was just sitting there going, oh God, you guys hate each other and it's fantastic. I'm sorry, that came through for me and
actually,
that's why I laughed.
Funnily enough, in real life, I think they actually like each other a lot. Didn't they all open Planet Hollywood together and stuff? So, I mean,
people meet up at places in Hollywood, it means they like each other.
No, I think they are actually friends in real life, but they are competitors in this field.
And look,
The film was bad at best, stupid. Big dumb stupid film. It was a misguided idea. Now on the flip side of that, if you're into that kind of film, as some of our chat room is, there are moments of fun to be had.
I can laugh at an explosion like any other person. I'm not a robot. I love it when she gets blown up.
When they stop talking and start shooting things, the film does take a turn in the right direction.
I'm going to stop for a minute, though, because, like, and I'm sorry to put Celine on the spot for this, but I actually have to say to you, I'm sorry, dude, but if you hate this film, right, if you actually are going to lead with that whole thing of you not liking this film, I'm sorry, but you have no right to like any 80s action film. Let me finish, and you can't counter until I finish my comment, because this film is no better or worse than those films. If you actually think about it when you're watching them, 80s action films, with the exception of the classic.
There are always exceptions to the rule.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Like, I'm talking your diehards and so on and so forth. I would never, ever, ever say otherwise. But if you like Commando, if you like Dolph Lundgren in The Punisher or something like this, if you can look at that movie and go, God, this is so bad, it's good, that is what you have to rate this movie as, because that is exactly what they were going for. And I'm sorry, as much as I think Stallone is, and I'm sorry, Mr. Stallone, if you for some reason ever hear this, is a bit of a jarhead, right?
You're past your prime, dude.
Yeah, and he knows it. But that whole movie is structured around that concept. Yes, there are 1,000 people trying to guide it into something that kind of works, and they failed. But the actual feeling of the movie is still that incredibly bad commander.
Yeah, I mean, put it this way.
If this movie was made back then, before we knew all these stars, and we actually tossed that back into the 80s and watched it now, I guarantee you that I would be like, that is going on my list of bad action films
okay.
I like to watch on
that
a weekend.
That was point. Counterpoint.
I do agree with you. Yes. I love a good action 80s movie. We're actually planning a movie marathon, hopefully on Sunday night, where we will be watching many a terrible action 80s
Absolutely.
Movie. And it will be fantastic. We will have the Commandos and everything else and all on there, and we will laugh our asses off.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I just couldn't get with this film is that, and you disagreed with me, I'm sure you'll disagree with me, there was no love.
She's pointing at me, by the way.
There was, I'm pointing at Dave. There was no love in this film for the 80s action genre. If it hadn't been...
No.
Because I think Stallone was trying to just make an action movie. I don't think he was trying to make a homage.
That's what he always does.
The difference is, I don't think he was trying to make an homage. Don't get me wrong, I don't think he was. I think he was making the film that he knows.
Yeah.
Exactly. The film that he knows is an 80s action movie.
So,
and the thing is, the problem I had with it is the fact, the reason why it fails, I'll come back to that. I know you're biting at the bit. The reason why I think it fails ultimately is the fact that I don't think Stallone was the person to write it.
Yes.
All right, but that's a whole different issue. Now,
the thing is, I would have actually enjoyed it a lot more, and I would be sitting here agreeing with you both and saying that it was a whole lot of fun. And yeah, it was fun in some parts. I would not have hated it if it had have been... If Stallone had have realized that they were kind of on paper before he wrote or directed it or whatever, that they were kind of thinking that it was going to be a homage film.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he realized that. I think he was just like, yeah, we've got all these really cool dudes. I remember him. Yeah, we're buddies. Let's make an action movie. I don't think he realized that they were kind of trying to make a homage film. Not necessarily taking the piss.
Okay, Josh,
but making
a
homage film, I would have enjoyed it more.
All right, Josh.
I recently rewatched Tango and Cash. Okay. Now, and this is where my counterpoint to this, my second counterpoint to this comes into it, which is that when I watched that film for the second time, outside of my 80s mind of which my childhood was based in, that film is horrendous.
Although, to be fair, and I'm going to counter this one.
It does have Tony whatever faces.
No. I'm going to counter this right now and say that in the 80s, Tango and Cash was considered to be a horrendous movie.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
It was never considered a good movie. That's why 20 years from now, when we go back and watch The Expendables, we are going to sit back and go, oh, my God, this is great.
But
it's
this
so
is why I can't.
That's right.
This
is the point.
And this is why I
can't
class it. I
can do that in 20 years' time. But looking at it now, in this day and age, me right now, not me 20 years from now, me now looking at that saying that was a film made this
and
year.
And I agree with you. What's going
to
happen?
And finish this year and release this year, and he was trying
that's
to
right.
make a proper action movie.
Hold
it
on,
was terrible.
Let me finish. This is not fair. I'm sorry, but that is exactly... That is exactly why I'm going to say that right now it's good. Because 20 years from now, are you going to say I was wrong? Because this film is bad to the point... This is GWB kind of level. Where it's like, it got such a large amount of money. And whether or not it does well at the box office, maybe, or maybe
number
not.
Number one at the box office right now, actually.
Okay, well, there you go.
It's
fantastic.
A smash success.
Exactly. Why? Because it is a fantastic... effort of a film. What it is it's all these bad action stars. We've never tried this before, and we probably never will again. Why?
Yeah,
because it's
it
terrible, right? But as a film, I will rewatch it, and I guarantee you will.
Oh, absolutely.
You will definitely rewatch this film.
I'm going to say right now, I'm going to buy it on Blu-ray.
Dude, there are whole scenes between action in Commando I can't stand. I can't stand
the
bits.
Have you seen my DVD?
There are whole scenes in this film where I will actually stop in Commando and just be like, my God, I can't watch this. Can we just skip?
Can we just skip
to the next
bad.
Bit?
Yeah.
But even then, when it came out, Commando came out at the thing, I was still like, look, it was a fucking stupid film, but God, I had fun.
Well, we had a lot of fun in Commando. I remember seeing Commando first run at the cinema. My friends and I all went to see it. We all just came out going, yeah!
It's like when he pipes the guy through the chest with the big stick.
Let's
have some steam, Bennett.
Exactly. I'm sorry. And you laugh your ass off, and that is why this movie succeeds in my eyes, because as stupid as it was, I still laughed, and I still had a ton of fun. The entire second half of this film, when they assault that building, when they're laying down the equivalent of like a box and a half of C4 around a building, and I'm just like, this is ridiculous. Who realistically uses this much? What kind of special forces people are you? It's like, let's level the building. That'll fucking clear them out. No, look,
only
I'm
way
sorry,
to be sure.
That Terry Crews with a shotgun that fires small nuclear warheads. I'm sorry. How can you possibly hate that? That film, the film succeeds because at a whole, when I walked out of that film, I was grinning like a fucking idiot because it was so stupid.
Bingo. That's
I had
it.
Fun.
That is
and
exactly
therefore,
the answer.
Therefore, I believe this film was fantastic. And I will suggest it to people on those reasons alone.
Look, I'm going to sum this up right now. I'm going to say the film is dumb. The film is stupid.
The film is ridiculous.
It is badly made.
It is a destruction to film as a genre.
However, if you just want to get yourself the jumbo size popcorn, the huge super tanker, huge super tanker of Coke, sit there with a donut on your cock and just basically go, yeah! You cannot pass this movie up.
No,
I don't know if it's a testosterone thing. I don't know if it's a boy thing, but I just sat there. You sit there when he walks, that one shot where he walks down the corridor firing the fucking gun and the bodies are just flying.
Turning into fucking red jelly.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And what's his name? Jason Statham and Jet Li beating up that dude and then freaking axe kicking his face backwards off his neck.
And you
things like this,
and
you cannot tell me.
And you can't take any of it seriously.
You cannot tell me it wasn't worth sitting through the rest of that film just to see those scenes. Everyone in the cinema
absolutely.
Was in
and
riot
to watch
hysterics.
Terry Crews and Steve Austin kick each other's ass, and to what you know.
Oh, Steve Austin
like,
and
all of this
stuff.
You just sit there watching. You go, I'll put up with the bad acting. I'll put up with the fact that there wasn't enough Charisma Carpenter in this movie. I'm sorry. I will put up
with the fact that the plot made
no
sense. No
sense
at all.
No sense at all.
Aside from the action, there's one scene of dialogue where Mickey Rourke gives this beautiful little monologue about saving your soul, and you sit there and go, you are so out of place in this movie. You are the only person who could act in this movie. Why are you here?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, but I will never be able to. I will never be able to consider this a bad film because it goes on my list of films like
that are gloriously terribly bad.
Exactly, it goes on my list with things like Plan 9 from Outer Space or whatever. It is one of those films that just transcends terrible.
I will watch this film often.
Exactly, it transcends terrible into the realm of just brilliant cinema because it is.
Snake
Oz
in our chat room is saying, "Hallway scene, greatest scene ever." Absolutely. This is just, I mean, you know, it's the sort of scenes that give men erections, all right?
Exactly. There was no way that you could have done that movie any other way because there's no way it could have came together any differently from that. There is just too many egos. There's too many older school mentalities. There's too much difference in the way that we film now as the way we filmed then. If this was filmed in the 80s, if we somehow retrospectively realized that in the future, exactly, if we had realized
it would
then,
be on our list of wonderful 80s action movies that were shit.
Exactly. Yeah. This film would, if this film had been created in the 80s, it would have immediately become like the Beatles album of its time. Like we would look back on it now and be like, do you remember in that awesome 80s period
as
where
an
we
example,
put all those
I went
together.
Back and I watched Commando. A couple of weeks ago. Predator, a couple of weeks ago. Hmm. And Predator, you know, for as much fun as it is, and the monster, and the, you know, chopper. Get the little chopper. Kill me now.
What's his name? Shane Black's awesome jokes and the
helicopter.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know what? The film is actually not a very good film.
No.
None of those 80s action movies
And you sit there and you watch it and you go, boy, the dialogue is really wooden. The acting is really bad. Mm. It's got great special effects, you know, but even some of the effects are a little bit dated now. Yeah. But you sit there and you go, the overall package is so much fun to watch. Yeah. You forgive it of any of its faults, you know? And I think
I'm sorry, guys. I can't forgive this.
And this film, that's fine. That's why there's three of us here, because we can give point and counterpoint. Yeah. I would actually say to people, if you just want a rollicking good time, you don't want to think too hard. You just want to see
a bunch of explosions and action
and shooting and don't expect to be taxed. Mm. Then fine, go see this movie. You'll have a ball. Mm. If you're going and you want something more substantial out of your movie, Not for you.
No.
Right? Don't go in wanting.
Much.
No, exactly. All right, so Josh, you're recommended to your friends, I guess.
I recommend it because if you don't watch this film now, you're going to be one of those liars later on down the track that when we watch this movie, you'll be like, yeah, I watched the cinema, I thought it was fantastic. You'll be one of those guys.
Yeah.
Because this film will become a phenomenon later on in its life when it's one of those things where it'll be like, remember when we got everyone from the 80s and put that into a movie?
People will remember this film.
This film will stay
an 80s movie in 2010.
Now, I'd also like to point out, Slash Film were the people who actually coined this phrase, so it's not my phrase, but I just need to say it here because I think it is so true. This is probably the only time in history that Scott Pilgrim and The Expendables will ever be mentioned at the same time, purely because they were released on the same day. Mm. Probably the biggest mistake in releasing history.
Yeah.
Because Scott Pilgrim has died, Expendables has taken off.
Yeah.
Had they not been opposite each other, Scott Pilgrim probably would have done better box office. And that just kind of shows you the mind state at the moment. People want that escapist nonsense. Yeah. They want to go and see the tough guys kick the bad guy's ass.
Mm.
You know, and that's what they want to see. And they will get that with Scott Pilgrim, but in a very different way. Mm. All right. So, Celine's a big no.
I would, a big yes. I would recommend it to a certain type of friend of mine. There's a certain type of person I would recommend this film to. I'd start out by saying, well, what kind of movies are you into? And then I would recommend it. I would personally not buy it. And I will not rewatch it in the next probably 5 years.
Next couple of decades.
No, I will give this movie 5 years and then I will rewatch it. I will not rewatch it this year at all.
When that happens.
Yeah.
And I will be there the day it is released.
I will be sitting there on the day it comes out on Blu-ray. Laughing my ass off going, I cannot believe I don't remember that happening. This is hilarious.
I will say one thing for Celine's sake, because, you know, like, I don't want her to think that I'm, you know, sort of attacking her on this, is understand that the day I buy this on Blu-ray, there will be a small amount of vomit trying to choke its way out my throat. Like, I shouldn't own
your
this film.
Your body is rejecting its own heart.
I'll be skipping.
No, but there'll be that piece of me going, oh, God, I can't believe I'm buying this. It's so awful.
At least you can acknowledge that. Dave, on the other hand, is totally sold.
I'll be skipping all the little rainbows will be falling out of me as I ready to
All right, Jesus.
We're way over time, but we're going to squeeze in these top five lists really fast.
Really?
Because we have too much to do in the after show. And also, it wouldn't be relevant. It's got to be relevant right now. We've got to strike while the iron is hot. So we're going to move through this really fast just to get through this. Should we just do our individual five? No, we'll do it in rounds, but we'll do it without too much explanation, okay? Because you know what? When it comes to this topic, I don't think any explanation is necessary. Mm. All right? We know that they're all crappy.
Yeah.
All right. Our list of five this week, if you hadn't already guessed, is going to be five 80s meathead action films.
Right.
Or the subcategory, which is films that you know will lower your IQ, The Expendables, but you can't help but watch them. You just can't help yourself but watch them. And we're going to start at number five, and we're going to say, go for it, Josh.
Okay, right. Number five, straight out the heat. This one here is an awful film. It is absolutely mind-bendingly disturbing. It broke a lot of people's minds that were into the subject at the time, but it is just so bad. I will watch it and I will laugh my ass off every time.
Waiting for it.
Dolph Lundgren's The Punisher.
Yes.
Oh, that film is just ridiculously bad.
And I will state right now that I didn't use The Punisher on this list because it is on the gloriously wonderful bad list.
It's just terrible. And they've shot it in Australia too, and you can see all the bays in the background.
Barry Otto is his sidekick.
Obvious.
Yep. It's just wrong.
Yeah. It's just wrong in every way. Celine, number five.
Number five. So we're going from the bottom, are we?
Yep. Worst to best.
Big Trouble in Little China. I have two down at the bottom. But it's not, the thing is, okay, the thing is that I don't, they're not muscle movies, they're mine are more action movies.
No, the reason why I say that is because I don't consider that a meathead film. It's one of,
yeah, that's
one
the thing.
Of my favorite movies.
But that's what I mean, it's an action movie.
But yeah, at the same time,
that's why I have trouble with this, because most of mine are action movies and not meathead movies, because I know the meathead movies, are, we're all going to have the same film.
Well, it, and like, I will say that it does fairly fall into the will lower your IQ while you're watching it thing. No, I'm sorry, because dude, as bizarre,
it's so tacky.
No, dude, I agree. It is, it, like I've said before, it's one of my favorite films, right?
Yeah.
But what I will say about the film is that in reality, it is really stupid,
but it's
clever
good fun.
At the same
it's
time.
So much fun.
So
really
I will give her it.
Snake says,
less.
"I'm with Dave."
Yeah. No, no, that was for before. That was
I'm taking it
about.
For this.
Yeah. All right, anyway, go, Dave. Number
right,
five.
My number
quick.
Five is Stone Cold, starring the
Jesus.
Superstar Brian Bosworth. I bet none of you remember him.
He was only in like one film.
That's right.
Anyway,
enough said. Meathead fights motorcycle gangs. Good action. Stupid film.
Yeah.
Number four.
Clash of Egos, Clash of Everything, terrible film, rubbish, 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 I can't say that enough, it is a fucking terrible film, but one of the greatest openings I've ever seen, Tango and Cash. It's fucking terrible.
It's a movie I have not seen, but we will be
watching on Sunday night. Tango and Cash is awesome because it's Sylvester Stallone trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, dude, it's awesome. Like, I love the to give people an idea of how bad this film is, because a lot of the people in the chat room know this guy, I rang Dave K. when we were planning this 80s film night, and I mentioned it, and he said, "I watched it recently. It doesn't age well."
No.
For Dave to say that means it is awful.
It wasn't good in the 80s, and it doesn't age well. It gives you an idea.
Absolutely.
But it's so funny to watch.
Celine
a movie
4.
That I love, Predator.
Predator, love Predator.
That's the thing. I'm sure that's on all of our
no,
lists.
No,
not on my list because I'm going for really meat-heady stuff, but I love Predator.
That's so. What I mean. Mine cool. are more action
But,
films.
Dude, to be honest, it does have a scene where a guy mows down an entire forest with a chain gun, so it does fall under meathead
and
in my
like,
car.
Well, they're all meatheads.
Yeah.
Straight. Okay, my number four, how to take a lucrative franchise. Unfortunately, it still made money, so they kept on making it. How to take a lucrative franchise of what was a classic film, put in two meatheads of Dolph Lundgren and Sylvester Stallone, and come out with Rocky IV.
Oh, that is a pretty meathead 80s movie.
All right.
Yep.
And Mr. T was in one of the Rocky movies, wasn't he?
Three.
Three,
yeah, he was in
right.
Three, yeah.
I was looking at Mr.
Three
T before.
Still
I'm like,
a better
what
film.
Movies has Mr. T done? Yeah, go on.
Josh.
I know that this one's going to be at least on, I think, Celine's list. I'm going to make that assumption. I'm not sure of it. But number three is Escape from New York, which
it's
right out there with my
favorites. I wouldn't have put that on this list because I actually think that's a great film.
No, look,
it's a great
I mean,
film, but
look,
it's... Yeah, really clever film as well. So.
It's a clever
film. I don't
consider
that a meathead film. But that's me. You know?
Well, no, that was actually going under. Dude, this is why I said you had to break this down, because that actually...
See, I don't think Escape from New York would lower your IQ. I think it's actually a very good film. But that's my personal opinion.
Okay. Escape from New York.
Well, we can say action movies, maybe.
Yeah, what the hell. We're breaking this up.
I've got some 80s action movies
online. We're breaking all the rules anyway. Mm. It doesn't matter.
Okay, for me, my number three, and you guys might disagree with this, is Terminator. And this is not for Arnie. This is for Linda Hamilton. Because that chick is fucking buff in that movie. Terminator 2. But even in 1, she's still a bit, like, got her man
jaw. Oh, dude,
jaw
towards
on.
The end where she starts getting all,
and
like...
she starts getting all greased up and stripped down. And it's just kind of like, whoa, Nelly.
You know me.
I'm sorry. But, yeah, she. That's for her. This is for Linda.
Benny, this is for you, buddy, because I actually considered putting that on my list
it's
as
a
well.
90s film.
However, it is a 90s
it is
film.
A 90s
it
film.
Is 1991.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, dude, cannot be used.
As is stuff like Judge Dredd and everything. So, there were actually a lot of great 90s films that we could have put on the list.
Oh,
but we
yes.
were keeping this strictly 80s.
Strictly 80s, because that's where the Expendables yes. was living. Okay.
And Fortress as well as a 90s film as well. I found that out too. Mm. So
well,
yeah,
go.
Yeah, no, Fortress. Yeah. Fortress
my number
was
three,
not
we've
be
discussed
on, my
on
list.
These lists before, and we've actually discussed on the show. So, enough said is Commando.
Yeah.
I think Commando.
So, Commando's on the list, definitely.
Definitely.
We didn't
oh,
even
no,
need to
it's
write
not on my
one.
List, actually.
Well, no, Josh actually put it on a list a couple of weeks ago, so
yeah,
he would have been repeating himself.
Yeah.
All right, number two.
Guilty pleasure, this one. I don't. It's definitely not on anyone else's list. This one is a personal favorite because it is goddamn awful, and it is as meat-heady as you can. And the comic relief is almost a meathead as well. I'm talking about Red Heat.
Oh, I love Red Heat.
Red Heat is fantastic. Watching Schwarzenegger try and play a Russian dude and then just walk around with machine guns killing everyone.
Well, Walter Hill's
as like, meathead as you can get.
Meathead as you can get. And it's got one of the greatest ending lines when he shoots him and goes, game over.
Yeah.
Oh, no. What do you say? End of story.
Yeah.
I love that. Anyway, my number two
would be Rambo First Blood / Commando. So Commando's on my list. I just didn't
know where it sits. Which Rambo are we talking about? First Blood Part 2?
Number one.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, dude, come on. That scene where he's on the end with the thing blowing up the cop
car. And
cars.
He's got the bow and arrow that's got the bomb on the end and he's going crazy.
Part 2, isn't that Part 2?
Part 1. I was.
All right. Anyway,
it
doesn't matter. The point is, yes, it's meatheady.
Yeah, meat
it's
heady.
Very meatheady.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I
it's meatheady.
Almost put Rambo 2, Rambo First Blood Part 2, because to me that is like the ultimate.
They just went. It was Rambo plus
80s,
more.
Ultimate 80s meathead. You know, wave the flag, junkie film that you could get, but I had other things, so I didn't do it. But
okay,
that
cool.
would have been on my list. My number two is Schwarzenegger, Raw Deal. You shouldn't drink and bake.
Oh, dude.
One of his lesser films.
You know what I love is that I think number one may be the same film for both of us, so I'm very excited about that.
Oh, really? Oh, cool.
oh, wait, we're back to me now, aren't
we? We're number one.
All right, dude.
Let's see if we're on the same wavelength.
I literally got this film and put it on my list because I went and watched the trailer. I was unsure about this film, and I went and watched the trailer.
I don't think we
and
had
it
the same
was a. Oh, okay, all right, cool. But and I rewatched it, and it was a YouTube dubbed version from the VHS tape, and I could tell because it was all like bad sound and everything. This film is just so meat-heady, and like when I think of quintessential 80s characters that are just dumb, I think Sylvester Stallone and Cobra.
Yes. No, it's not my number one because it's actually on, it's almost on the Gloriously Wonderful Bad list, so I didn't want to put it on there, but I completely agree with you.
Dude, it is just
him
in those glasses
on the list.
With those shitty boots.
Crime is a disease, meet the cure.
And his tiny fucking jeans. I'm just sitting there like, wow, dude, you were just everything that was wrong with the 80s.
Cobra was awesome. Also produced by my favorite people, the Canon Group, Menachem Golan, Yoram Globus. So there you go. All right, number one.
Number one, one of the first action movies I have ever watched. It has everything. It has busty wenches. It has monsters. It has Arnold Schwarzenegger. It is Conan.
Oh.
Yes, thank you. That was the one that I thought you guys would not have on your list.
No, I love Conan. It wouldn't go on my list because I actually love Conan.
Yeah,
quite frankly.
I love it, but it's so bad.
My number one, take alcohol. Take busty women, take Sam Elliott, take Patrick Swayze, make them bouncers, and you've got Roadhouse.
Oh, dude, Roadhouse. Yes.
I love Roadhouse.
Oh, Roadhouse. God, no.
Roadhouse is awesome.
I'm adding it.
All right. We're going to get out of here. If you agree or disagree with anything that we have to say today, send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com. Or you can send us a voicemail at 02-8011-3167. We'd love to hear from you guys. Voicemail some of your favorite 80s films. What the hell?
Mm.
All right. We are also going to just give a quick plug off to Josh. Josh, tell us about DLC.
Right. I'm going to do this really incredibly fast. I'm going to go for an all-time speed record here.
Yep.
Raw DLC is a gaming website. If you haven't been to our gaming website, you should really go and check it out. We have a live show that goes at 8 p.m. on Wednesdays. Make sure that you guys jump over to the site. And if you've got some money, please put it in the donation box. We need donations for a computer. And I also need you guys to go to iTunes, type in DLC, and give us a rating. That'd be really great. Thanks.
And you'll be able to listen to published freelance journalists.
Moving right along.
All right. Now, we also have to get two other plugs. We're going to do this really, really fast. If you like movie podcasts, then you can't go past listening to The Real Junkies podcast, which you can find at weekendronin.com, or go listen to The Movie Fan Cast at moviefanhouse.com. Both of these are well worth having a listen to. And we also have to give a really quick shout out, because he's in our chat room as well, is to, of course, Josh Spencer, cartoonist extraordinaire, who is doing our new cover art, and he is fabulous.
And also has one of the coolest website names ever made.
Coolest URL with attackninja.blogspot.com. Go check his other artwork out. He is very, very talented. We're not going to do any other plugging for the moment, just to let you know that you can watch the show live if you want to watch us live. We start at Saturday at 12 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. We start with tech, we move to film, we go to the after show. It's a long day, but it's a lot of fun. So,
and don't forget that you should rate this show as well.
And yes, if you are an iTunes user, please go to iTunes and leave us reviews or ratings, because they're helping us move up the ranks. We've got to get this show, in particular this show, because it's a brand new feed. We're trying to move this feed up. Okay? But I think that's it. I think that's over. We're going to go out, as we do on this new show, with a selection of music from one of the films we have reviewed. We're going out with a selection from Scott Pilgrim. This is actually not one of the songs. This is actually from the score, so you can actually have a listen to this. I want to say thank you very much, Celine.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much, Josh.
Always a pleasure.
And we will see you both in the after show, which is coming up straight after this. And for the audio listeners, it'll be out on Wednesday. So here is a bit of Scott Pilgrim. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week.